Vayesha begins according to Chazal with a wish that was not granted. The pasuk on the face of it, as we begin Perek Lamed Zayin, Vayeshev Yaakov Be'eretz Megurei Aviv, Yaakov lives place of the sojourn of his father, Be'eretz Kanaan. But there is more to be perceived within this pasuk than merely a description of a situation. Especially as we contrast the verb Vayeshev Yaakov, which has that connotation of being settled, with the phrase that follows, Be'eretz Megurei Aviv, and Megur is from the word ger, temporary, transient. Certainly there's a contrast between how Yaakov was living, of course, within the higher levels of the differences of Yaakov and Yitzchak, between how Yaakov is living and how Yitzchak is living. And Rashi, of course, comments, it's a famous statement of Chazal, Bikesh Yaakov Leshev Bashalva. Yaakov wanted to dwell in security. That actually doesn't sound to be such a bad thing, especially after everything he's been through. A bit of peace. And moreover, if we consider, what would Yaakov do if he had a bit of peace? He'd be Yaakov. He'd go back to being Yoshev Aholim as he was in his youth. And still, it was not to be. Kofatz alav rogzav shel Yosef. The troubles with Yosef happened because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is exacting with tzaddikim, and this world is not a place of rest for them. And therefore, it was considered unacceptable for Yaakov to wish to dwell b'shalva, so much so that when he wanted to do so, trouble started with Yosef. And Rabbi Eliezer Ashkenazi, the Masi Hashem, asks a simple question, if we may ask. And he does. It's a little harsh. There's plenty of ways to remove a person from shalva without throwing the entire family into turmoil and disarray. With all that came after that. So when one considers the infraction against the reaction, it seems to be somewhat disproportionate. Yaakov wants to say b'shalva, and look at the results. Look at what happened then. By the time the parsha is finished, Yosef is away in a foreign land, and as events unfold, the whole of the exile in Egypt begins. It's a lot. And it's for this reason, says the Masi Hashem, that we need to appreciate that the most crucial word in this Maimor Chazal is the word kofatz, which is interesting. It's only not interesting because we're used to it. But kofatz literally means to jump. And that's a rather strange thing to say. In other words, events happen. But how do they jump? And that is why, says the Masi Hashem, we can't forget that at a certain level, and Chazal speak about this also, at a certain stage, the Bris Ben Abisarim has been said, events will bring the Jewish people into Golus. The question is, when, where, how? But if we take the Bris Ben Abisarim at face value, the Jewish people will undergo. They'll be in a strange land and there'll be trouble there. All of that is going to happen sometime. So the question is when, that's all. And that is why, had Yaakov not wished to be Leshe Bashalva, and therefore there was no reason for any trouble to occur, so the events of Yosef and the events of the family and everything that led them down to Mitzrayim, it may have happened later on. There's no reason for it to happen now. But it's only because the added catalyst of Bikesh Yaakov Leshev Bashalva, so all of those events that would have happened somewhat further down the line, jumped. Kofatz alav rogzo shel Yosef. They jumped up. In other words, they came forward before their time. And that is the understanding of Kofatz alav rogzo shel Yosef. So again, to be clear, because that's really what the Maase Hashem means to say, no one is suggesting that everything that happened would not have happened had Yaakov not wished to be Leshia Bashalva. It wouldn't have happened then, and perhaps not necessarily in exactly that way. What his desire to Leshia Bashalva, it caused a jump. And the truth is that in this vein, the Kli Yochar has a very similar approach. And he brings us back again to the Bris Ben HaBasharim. As we know, there are a number of Mefarshim who maintain that the 400 years of the Bris Ben HaBasharim, if we understand that 400 years actually elapsed, although we were only off location, we were only in Golus for the 210 years, if the 400 years indeed elapsed, that must mean that the clock started ticking already from the birth of Yitzchak, which is the approach of Rashi. And altogether, indeed, the birth of Yitzchak preceded our descent to Mitzrayim by 190 years, a total of 400 years. Now, that works out, shall we say, arithmetically, but there's just one crucial point. Namely, it's not enough for Yitzchak to be born, because the very, shall we say, the lowest gear of the Bris Ben HaBasharim is at the very least Ki Ger Yezarecha Be'eretz Lo Lahem, that they need, that they will be Gerim. Now, there could be that there are certain places that they went which were not yet fully part of Eretz Yisrael, Eretz Plishtim, and the like. But there's a lot of time that Yitzchak is not in Eretz Plishtim. He lives in Be'er Sheva. Be'er Sheva is not Eretz Lo Lahem, it's part of Eretz Yisrael. If Eretz Yisrael, Eretz is Lo Lahem, then what is Lahem? So how then, or during those times, how do we understand that Yitzchak living his existence within Eretz Yisrael, in the heart of Eretz Yisrael, is still considered to be fulfilling Ki Ger Yezarecha? How can it be? And therefore, says the Kli Yochar, it must be that under those circumstances, it's not so much a question of where you're living, but how you are living. In other words, if Yitzchak understands that in principle, he is already serving time, shall we say, as part of Zera Avraham, of Ger Yeh Zarecha. So it makes a difference how he lives. Does he live as the Balabayit, or does he live as a Ger? It's a question of how he relates to his surroundings, how established he wishes to make himself in every respect. And the truth is that, of course, Yitzchak leads a very modest life, and his life within Eretz Yisrael is referred to by the Pasuk as Eretz Megurei Aviv, which is amazing, because he has, in a sense, perfected the art of living as a ger within Eretz Canaan. It's called Eretz Megurei Aviv be'Eretz Canaan. And therefore, says the Kli Yochar, aside from the general value of a tzaddik should not just wish to take things easy, even though, once again, for Yaakov that meant something very different than it would for us, but even aside from the general value that a tzaddik shouldn't want to be Leshia Bashalva, there's a specific concern here, because if Yaakov wishes to be Leshia Bashalva, then he will disrupt the fulfillment of Ger Yezarecha Be'eretz Lo Lahem, because Leshia Bashalva, to dwell in security, as is reflected by the words Vayeshev Yaakov, are an out-and-out abrogation of Ger Yezarecha. You cannot be Ger Yezarecha if you wish to be Leshia Bashalva. And therefore, says Kli Yochar, and this is very interesting, because he also takes the approach of Kofatz Rogues of Shay Yosef. Right? The thing of Yosef happened, it jumped up. And what does that mean? It means that, in principle, as it turned out, 190 years of the 400 years were served in Eretz Canaan. As far as we understand, that's better. It's better to serve it out, I wouldn't say house arrest, but better that than in exile, if possible. Can we speculate to how much longer could that have happened? Is there a minimum amount of time that we had to be in Chutz La'aretz, a minimum amount of time that we had to be enslaved and persecuted? That we don't know. It could very well be that there is no expiry, as if to say, as long as the Jewish people are living in Eretz Canaan as Geirim, so they can push to the limit of the 400 years, perhaps all of it, or perhaps most of it. And therefore one can only ponder, says the Kli Yochar, that had Yaakov Avinu not be Keshleshe Bashalva, but rather taken more the line of Be'eretz Merguri Aviv, then perhaps whatever happens with Yosef again would have happened much further down the line, because he would have been able to continue serving the time of the Bris Ben HaBasharim. But once he's bikesh leishe bashalva, so then the bris ben habrisora is in danger of being disrupted. And that's the point where, if he does not wish to be a ger within Eretz Yisrael, that precipitates events to becoming a ger outside of Eretz Yisrael. So these are very weighty considerations with regards to Vayeshev. And of course, the biggest chiddush of all is really starts with that medrash that sees within Vayeshev not only a statement of fact, but also a statement of purpose. Bikesh leishev bashalva. Now, we have to confront certain issues in the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. It's a very difficult parsha because it's all of the difficulties, the trouble and the strife between Yosef and his brothers. And we need to look at the psukim carefully to see how the great Mefarshim explain this parsha for us. We would say, if we could, that the factors that exacerbated or brought about the ill feeling were three in nature. Number one, the pasuk says that Yosef brought negative reports about his brothers to his father. Vayave Yosef estibas amra'a el avihem. He considered them to be sorely lacking in certain areas and told his father about that. The brothers did not appreciate that, of course. Secondly, there's the favoring of Yosef, which the brothers saw. And we should know, it's important to talk about it and to talk about it correctly, because the Gemara says that that was considered a mistake. Even on Yaakov's part, there's a lesson to be learned from there, which is actually a chiddush. Namely, la'olam al yishane odam ben bin abonim. A person should not favor children one over the other because, says the Gemara, look, Yaakov favored Yosef and look what happened. And once again, we should not take a simplistic approach as if to say, well, if only Yaakov hadn't favored Yosef, then we never would have gone into exile. I mean, there's so many other factors in play. Once again, the Bris ben Habrisorim is hovering over everything and so on and so forth. But as a catalyst, the words of the Gemara are, Nisgalgel hadavar v'yardu avaseinu l'mitzrayim. It rolled it on, just another notch. And ad kedei kach that the Chazal were able to look into Parshas Vayeshev and extract this as a principle to be learned for all families, for all generations. Don't favor one child over the other. That's a lesson learned from Parshas Vayeshev. And they said there's many other lessons that you could have said, you know, could have been learned, which would nullify the whole thing. Don't throw your brother into a pit, and don't sell him to Ishmaelim, and don't tell slander about your other brothers. I mean, there's so many. In order to really reach in and extract a lesson for all parents, I mean, that you need the vision of Chazal. Thirdly, the dreams. Every time Yosef tells him another dream, it makes things worser and worse. And we need to see exactly how the psukim are communicating to us what brought about the negative reaction of the brothers and ultimately to a very dangerous point. And let's begin just to see the psukim here. The dibar ra'a, the end of pasuk beis, it says, Vayave Yosef es dibasam ra'a el avihem. Yosef brought negative reports to their father. Okay. The burning question of the end of pasuk beis is dibasam ra'a, bad reports about them. About whom? Dibasam ra'a. Who was he talking about? Now we think the answer may be very simple, about the brothers. It's not so simple. Let us see, for example, Rashi. Rashi says, es dibasam ra'a, it's a well-known Rashi, certainly the end, kol ra'a shahaya ra'a be'echa b'nei Leah. Everything bad he saw in his brothers, sons of Leah, of course Binyamin is not part of this, he's much younger, b'nei Leah are half of the equation, Hayamagid la'aviv. And of course, Rashi gives us his famous three examples, which are unbelievable. Avim Menachai, and the Vayumizalzalim Bivnei Hashvachos. And they treated the sons of the Shvachos, namely of Bilhah and Zilpah, they treated them very flippantly. They called them slaves. And he considered them suspect with regards to Arius also. These are very serious charges. That needs to be understood very well. Were the brothers in any way, did they bring suspicion upon themselves in these things? Why does Yosef think that they're acting suspiciously or incorrectly? But be that as it may, we see clearly that Rashi specifies that the bad reports that Yosef brought were not about all of the brothers. They're about the brothers, the sons of Leah. And of course, one of them was actually how the sons of Leah treated the other sons. And in terms of the Pasuk, why does Rashi say this? Because if you look earlier in the Pasuk, it says, V'hu na'ar es b'nei Vilha v'es b'nei Zilpa n'she aviv. In other words, apparently he was on very good terms with the sons of b'nei Bilha and b'nei Zilpa. V'hu na'ar, right, he kept their company and he was nice to them and good for them and stuck up for them. So if you read the Pasuk in a straight line, he's friendly with B'nai Bilha and B'nai Zilpa, but he brings bad reports about the brothers. So which brothers is it going to be? It's about the other brothers. About B'nai Leah. That's Rashi. Now, the Ramban quotes this explanation of Rashi and asks a very simple question. Namely, if indeed Yosef does nothing to incur the ill feeling of the other brothers, so why are they in on the sale? No one protests. Well, the only people that protest in one way or another, well, Reuben says don't kill him, and Yehuda says don't leave him in the pit, but in terms of, let's say, protesting any type of move against Yosef, we never find that there's four brothers, like Dan, Naphtali, Gad, and Asher, Ebnei, Bilhah, Ebnei, Zilpah. What has he ever done to them? Nothing, says Ramban, but apparently something, because all the brothers concur by the end. But what is it that he does against Ebnei, Bilhah, and Ebnei, Zilpah? Now, what's interesting is, at this point, if we pause and we would try and offer our own answer to this question, what would we say? Well, listen, he may have been nice to them, and maybe he didn't bring bad reports about them, but there's other things, right? What about the favoring, and what about the dreams? And apparently Ramban is not moved by any of that. And we have to see why. Because actually, the approach of the Ramban, and we'll see that it's not so simple to read the Pasuk in a straight line. The Pasuk says, and through these words of the Ramban, we'll actually find out a little bit not only how the brothers relate to Yosef, but how the brothers relate to each other. In other words, says Ramban, there are two sets of brothers. Interesting. Two camps of brothers. There's the sons of Leah, and there's the sons of the Shvachos. When the Pasuk says that Yosef brought bad reports about his brothers, it's about the sons of the Shvachos. The very ones that he kept company with, says Ramban, he saw fault in them and would talk to their father about them. Now, that's quite a thing to say, right? Can that be said? Actually, from a certain point of view, it's the simpler reading of the Pasuk. Because does the Pasuk not say, I mean, these two phrases one after the other. The first thing it says is, V'hu na'ar es b'nei Bilha v'es b'nei Zilpah n'shavim. He keeps the company of the sons of Bilha and Zilpah. Next phrase, Vayaveh Yosef es dibasam ra elaviyem, and he brings bad reports about them. Dibasam, that's a pronoun. Them, who's them? The rules of grammar say whenever there's a pronoun, it refers to the most recently mentioned noun. That's b'nei Bilha and b'nei Zilpah. So actually, the simple reading of the Pasuk seems to imply that the bad reports are about Bilhah and Zilpah. What's he going to say about them? That we don't know. But they are the ones. Now, if that's true, then the shoe is almost on the other foot now. Because now we need to know, well, what about the Bnei Leah? It sounds like he hasn't really done anything against them. Says Ramban, that is to come. That's Pasuk Gimel. B'Yisrael es Yohaves Yosef mikol banav ki ben zekunim hulo v'asalo kasonas pasim. Yaakov favors him. He makes him the special coat. Pasuk Dalet vayu echav ki oso ahava v'hem mikol echav. The brother saw that he loved him best out of everyone. Vayisnu oso, and they hated him. It's a very strong term. That's what the Torah uses. Says Ramban, who are those brothers? This is fascinating. Who are those brothers that are so incensed by the fact that Yaakov favors Yosef over them? Says Ramban, that is B'nai Leah. And the reason why I say that, says Ramban, that it's B'nai Leah specifically, is because what do they object to? He's the favorite child. Says Ramban, It's a question as to whether you feel incensed by Yaakov favoring one of the children over the other depends on who you are. Because Yaakov has two sets of wives, ultimately. The Geviros, Rachel and Leah, and the Shifros. Now, the Shifros, one can say that they were no longer Shifros, but we will see that sense of being B'nei Hashvachos, it follows them. It follows them. There is a certain sense, it expresses itself sometimes, that the B'nei Hashvachos are not of equal standing with the B'nei HaGeviros. And one of the ways it expresses itself, says Ramban, is that the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, they're not really going to be outraged by the fact that Yosef is being favored. It's not going to be them. Which is very interesting. We don't normally look at it that way. And therefore, what emerges is, according to the Ramban, the unfortunate situation is by the time we go through these four psukim, everyone has something against Yosef, but it's not the same thing. The brothers are divided in their grievances even into two groups, B'nai Bilhah and B'nai Zilpah because of the bad reports that he spreads about them, and the B'nai Leah because they are incensed that he's being favored over them because each one of them feels that they're in the running. B'nai Leah is B'nai Leah, and of course again Binyamin's out of the equation, but that's six brothers, that's enough for them. And by the time they're finished, they are all united in the sense that Yosef's behavior is unacceptable to them. Now what's interesting is, Mefarshei Rashi, of course, we should not forget. Rashi does not explain like the Ramban. Rashi says that the bad reports that were brought by Yosef was about B'nai Leah. Now again, the question of the Ramban returns. If it's about B'nai Leah, so then why are B'nai Bilhah and B'nai Zilpah, why are they so angry at him as well? The answer says, the Mizrahi is very simple. In other words, the principal argument here is that for the Mizrahi, he may not have brought bad reports about B'nai Bilhah and B'nai Zilpah. He may even have stuck up for them. But by the time the dreams come along and they're all going to be bowing down to him, that was too much for everyone. That united them, which is interesting. On this point, Rashi seems to differ with Ramban. Ramban seems to consider it to be something that's so far beyond them that they wouldn't be upset by it. Whereas as far as Rashi is concerned, he sees them more as being on a level field, that they would be equally upset by Yosef, even if he didn't bring bad reports about B'nai Bilhah and B'nai Zilpah. What's interesting is, after all is said and done, and it seems as far as Rashi is concerned, they're all equally upset with Yosef. Yes reports, no reports, doesn't matter. He had the dreams, have them all bowing down to them. They all agree he has to go. But we will find out from a later comment of Rashi that there was yet a difference. It yet made a difference that Yosef kept the company of B'nai Bilhah and B'nai Zilpah and was nice to them. How? In the brachas of Yaakov. The brachas of Yaakov to Shimon and Levi. Now, how does he begin his brachas? Shimon v'Levi achim kleimach kleichamas mecheiroseim. Now, Shimon v'Levi achim, of course, is not meant in a nice way. Shimon v'Levi achim means they are a dangerous pair. Why? Well, as far as Rashi is concerned, two reasons. Not only what happened with Shechem, I mean, that was the united effort of Shimon and Levi just by themselves, but also Rashi understands that many of Yaakov's references within the brachos was to those that were involved in Mechiras Yosef. Now the question is, Shimon and Levi, are we aware of any specific contribution that they had to Mechiras Yosef that are mentioned by name in this week's Parsha? And Reuven says what he says, Yehuda says what he says, Shimon and Levi are not mentioned. Says Rashi, they don't have to be mentioned. Look at the pasuk, you'll work it out. Because as Yosef approaches them, it says, Vayomru ish el achiv. The most dangerous statement was actually said by whoever those two people are. That is the worst plan for Yosef. Because they say, here's the dreamer, he's coming, let's kill him. Now everything else was downgrading from that. Reuven says, don't kill him. Yehuda says, don't leave him in the pit. But whoever spoke first, Ish el Achiv, it sounds like there were two people. If it's not the generic brother to his fellow. One of them said to the other, says Rashi, who's it going to be? Well, it's not going to be Reuven, and it's not going to be Yehuda, because they actually said different things. And then, says Rashi, he explains why it's not going to be Zebulun and Yisachar, they're much younger. And then he says, and it's not going to be any of the sons of Bnei Bila, Bnei Zilpah, because they never would have instigated an action. They would never have been the force behind it, because Yosef stood up for them. Which is interesting. Because then by process of elimination, it's got to be Shimon and Levi, and that's Shimon and Levi Achim. So even as we do find them, there's no avoiding it, that by the time the sale comes, none of them object. But one thing you could be sure, says Rashi, don't forget that if anyone would be favorable towards Yosef, it's going to be the Bnei Bilhah, Bnei Zilpah. They certainly would not have started the whole thing, and certainly not have said to kill him. So in the final analysis, we find different levels, ultimately, of antagonism towards Yosef, based on his relationship with factions within the brothers in the beginning of the Parsha. What we do see, and which is a fascinating yesod really in Parshanut from Rashi here, Rashi and the Ramban, they differ in application, but they both agree in principle, that we see here an example of the concept that you can have the same word, and depending on the context in which it's used, it will mean different things. What do I mean? When the Pasuk uses the word Echav, Yosef's brothers, who are his brothers? Who is the reference to? Of course, in so many places, the reference is to all of the brothers. I mean, that's the default, shall we say. That's the stam. But we see from our Parsha that the Pasuk can use the word Echav, and we know that it does not refer to all of the brothers. For example, once again, to go back to Pasuk Beis of Perek Lamed Zayin, Eile told us Yaakov. Yosef ben Shivasre Shana, Haya Roe es Echav Batzon. He was with his brothers. Now, who are those brothers? It's clear, as far as Rashi is concerned, that the reference to the brothers is only to the sons of Leah. Because when it goes on to say that he was friendly with the sons of Bnei Bilhah and Bnei Zilpah, and then says, Vayave Yosef Esti Bosom, he brought their bad reports, there must be someone mentioned in the Pasuk who is the reference to Bnei Leah, because Rashi says we're only talking about Bnei Leah. They are the Echav in the beginning of the Pasuk. And therefore we see that although generally the word Echav refers to all of the brothers, but sometimes according to context, it will refer only to some of the brothers. We need to maintain an open mind, so to speak, as to just how many of the brothers are within this word, the same word, Echav. And by the way, the Ramban concurs. In his context, because in Pasuk Dalet, when it says Vayu Echav, the brother saw that the father loved him and they hated him, Ramban's already told us that was only true of the sons of Leah. The sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, I mean, they wouldn't have reacted that way. They never really had such aspirations. And so each one in his own way understands that the word Echav sometimes can refer to all of the brothers. In fact, most times it does. But sometimes we need to keep a watch on the Pasuk that it may actually only be referring to a certain set of the brothers, and that's true for many words in Lashon HaKodesh and many words in Chumash. The very same word, depending on the context, can actually have a broader meaning or a more confined meaning. Now, let's move from here, I'm still trying to keep an eye on the Parshanut, to the sale, because it can get a little bit confusing. Let's see how we make Seder here. In Pasuk Kafhei, in other words, the question, of course, assuming that it's the brothers who are behind the sale, but who do they sell him to? Well, the first people that come on the scene are mentioned in Pasuk Kafhei. Vayishvu lechol lechem, vayisu enehem vayiru, they lift up their eyes, and what do they see? Vihinei orchas Yishmaelim ba'om Gilad. So they see a caravan of Yishmaelim. Okay. I'm not sure whether Yishmaelim are specifically descendants of Yishmael, but certainly they are of that ilk. So the Yishmaelim. So, Pasuk Kaf Zayin. Luchu, they say, this is Yehuda talking now, Luchu, v'nim karenu le Yishmaelim. So that's the plan. Now, what's interesting is, if we have a look in Pasuk Kaf Ches, it says, Vaya'avru anoshim midyonim sochem. All of a sudden, from nowhere, appear these Midianite businessmen. Midyonim socharim. Now, vayim shechu vayalu es Yosef min abor, there's many pronouns here. They lifted him up and they sold him. It's the brothers who sold him. And then it says, "Vayimkurus Yosef liishmaelim ve'esrim kesef." So we have this kind of very transient mentioning of the socharim, midyanim socharim, but ultimately he sold to the Ishmaelim. So what exactly are these socharim midyanim doing there? That we don't know. And what are we to make of all of this? Now the Ibn Ezra, who's looking for to find a straight line here through this parsha, one of the road for Yabshat, the Ibn Ezra says you need to understand that it happens in the Tanakh that Midyanim are called Yishmaelim. In other words, presumably the understanding is they're all from the same family. He brings up ultimately, right? They're all from Bnei Yehoga, Bnei Keturah, Yishmael, his brothers. And he brings a proof from the Navi in Shoftim, where the very same group of people are in Shoftim Perek Zayin are referred to as Midyanim, and in Perek Ches are called Yishmaelim. So you see, says the Ibn Ezra, Midyanim and Yishmaelim, it's essentially the same thing. And with that, Osei Shalom, with that all is resolved. Now the Ramban is unhappy with this Ibn Ezra, because Ramban says that it seems to be gratuitous that the pasuk is just fluctuating between Yishmaelim and then the Midyanim and then the Yishmaelim again. I mean, what for? He's unhappy with that approach. As far as Ramban is concerned, they're two separate groups. And therefore, and Ramban proceeds then to describe how he was sold first to one and then to the other. And there are links in a chain. Okay. What's the problem? The problem is, if there are links in a chain, and here we need to continue to keep a careful watch on the psukim, if there are links in a chain, then who ultimately brought Yosef? Potiphar. And who did he buy him from? He, by definition, if there are links in a chain, he bought him from the final link in the chain, just before him. Now that's all right, let's take our pick. But it's either the Midyanim sold him to the Ishmaelim, or vice versa. Either way, Potiphar bought him from one and not the other. Where do things get complicated? Well, let's take a look at the end of this perek. Pasuk Lamed Vav. What happens? Vahamedonim. Now, Medonim, let us say for argument's sake, can be used interchangeably. Medonim and Midyanim. They're actually brothers originally from Bnei Keturah. Medon and Midyan. The Midyanim sold him to Potiphar. Okay, now if we're going to go with a two-stage process, apparently now we know that as much as he was originally sold to the Ishmaelim, but they passed him on to the Midyanim, and they were his final handlers before they gave him to Potiphar. Okay, so far so good. Except, in the beginning of Perek Lamed Tes, when the Pasuk, in Rashi's words, does something of a recap, just to bring us back to the story of Yosef, having digressed for the story of Yehuda and Tamar in Perek Lamed Tes. So in the beginning of Lamed Tes, it says, V'yosefu ad Mitzrayma, V'yiknehu Potiphar Srisparasar Tabachim Ish Mitzri, Miyad Hayishma'elim Asher Hariduhu Shama. So now we're stuck. There's no way that he could have been sold from one to the other and been brought both from one and the other. That's the kasha of the Maharal on the Ramban. And based on this question, Maharal Gur Aryeh. Based on this question, Maharal says, Hilkach nearly, therefore it seems to me that the approach of the Ibn Ezra is correct. And I have to say, this is a confession and not an observation, but I was shocked to see the Maharal agree with Ibn Ezra, because I've never seen that before. I have never seen him quote Ibn Ezra and not argue with him. But that, I think, is just merely a shortcoming, number one, my ignorance of the Maharal, but also it's the patterns, the character patterns that we get into that we already know, of course. Ibn Ezra, he always gets into trouble with the Maharal because it goes off to the Pshat, and the Maharal represents Das Rabbeinu, and so you almost develop a Pavlovian response whereby if Ibn Ezra is quoted, trouble is coming in the Maharal. And that is a superficial, of course, characterization, and we would be the ones that suffer from it, because the Maharal, as everybody else, tries to understand the pasuk in the way that he thinks is correct, and the Ibn Ezra is not fundamentally incapable of being correct. And on this occasion, the Gur Aryeh is not moved or influenced by the fact that the last 99 occasions that he quoted the Ibn Ezra was to argue with him. But on this occasion, he's right, and he chooses his approach. When the pasuk talks about Midyanim, it's another way of referring to the Ishmaelim. It's all one group. And therefore, it's correct to say that Potiphar was bought Yosef from the Ishmaelim on the one hand, and it says he bought him from the Midyanim on the other hand, because it's all the same people, like the Ibn Ezra said. Now, of course, the question will be, the Ramban's question will return. The Ramban did not like this approach for the very simple reason that it seems to be a gratuitous shifting in terminology between Ishmaelim and Midyanim. For what? Says the Gur Aryeh, my response to that question is as follows. It seems that when we say, the Ibn Ezra says, and he demonstrated it from the Navi in Shoftim, when we say that the Midyanim can also be called Yishmaelim, what that means is because the Yishmaelim were the dominant people at the time. Their future and their influence is referred to as the Alpinei Kol Echav Yishkon. Yishmael is everywhere, as we know. Now, if that's true, then in a sense, they more or less dominated the region. Certainly their brothers, their less influential brothers, the Midonim and the Midyonim. And how does this express itself? Because as a matter of generality, because everyone was so much under the influence of the Yishmaelim, so the average person, even if he's not a natural Yishmaeli, will take on the habits and the dress and the conduct of the Yishmaelim, unless you know otherwise. How does this relate to our situation? Because, says the Gur Aryeh, we'll see something fascinating. The symptom of this situation is that if you saw a group of, shall we say, for argument's sake, Midyanim, if you saw them from a distance, but you didn't know better, and you didn't know them really at all, you'd call them Ishmaelim. It is an expression of the influence of Yishmael over them. And they would maybe take you to the side and say, listen, we're not actually Yishmaelim, we're Midyanim, but you never know. And this is a kiyum, really, of the dominance of Yishmael. Al pnei kol achav yishkom. If you see them, a caravan in the distance, you'll say, those are Yishmaelim, even if they're not. Because they become so Yishmaelized that they may be Midyanim, but it doesn't matter. Maybe they're second generation Midyanim, they basically behave like Yishmaelim. And the way that this comes out, says the Maharal, is whenever the Pasuk, and this is, I think, a sensitive but fascinating point, whenever the Pasuk talks about the brother seeing them, it calls them Yishmaelim. Because the way the brother saw them was as Yishmaelim. Whenever the Pasuk itself talks about them, it calls them Midyanim, because they were, really. And therefore, if we say, in back to Pasuk Kafhei, when it says, Vayisu'u einehem, Vayu, they saw, V'inei Orchis Yishmaelim, that's what they saw. To them, it looked like Orchis Yishmaelim. And therefore they said in Pasuk Kaf Zayin, L'chuvnim kreneli Yishmaelim. When the brothers are talking, they'll call them Yishmaelim. In Pasuk Kaf Ches, when it says Vayavru Anoshim Midyanim, that's the Pasuk talking. Because in reality, they were Midyanim. And when it goes on to say Vayim Shechu, back to the brothers, Vayelu as Yosef Minabor, Vayim Kuras Yosef Li Yishmaelim, because once again, if we're talking about the brothers, then we refer to the people that they sold them to in the way that they saw them. That is what determines when they're called Ishmaelim and when they're called Midyanim. And exactly the same thing is true on the other side of the equation, on the Potiphar side. Because we saw that on the one hand it sounds like Potiphar bought from Midyanim, on the other hand, Ishmaelim. So what's the resolution? Pasuk Lamed Vav, says Maharal of Perek Lamed Zayin, is the Pasuk talking about the sale. And who sold him? If you ask the Pasuk, who sold him? Midyanim. Midyanim machu oso al Mitzrayim lePotifar. From the seller's point of view, the Torah is referring to them as the seller, is they are Midyanim. But in the beginning of Perek Lamed Tes, when it's already from Potiphar's point of view, for who did he buy them from? So it already calls them Yishmaelim again. And what I think is so, on the one hand, it seems to be a very technical issue. Yishmaelim, Midyanim. But I think we see a fascinating concept here, an important yesod. Namely, when the Pasuk describes people seeing things, it describes the things that they saw in the way that they saw it. That's a chiddush. That's a yesod. In other words, when it says that the brothers saw them, so even though the Pasuk, so to speak, itself knows that these are not Ishmaelim, the Pasuk itself will call them Midyanim, because really, really they're Midyanim. But when it describes the brothers seeing them, it describes them as the brothers saw them. And the brothers saw them as Ishmaelim, then the Pasuk says the brothers saw Ishmaelim. That's fascinating. And the truth of the matter is, that will take us right back to the beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. Because if we go back again, to Pasuk Beis and Pasuk Gimel, and we'll ask a simple question. It's not a pleasant question, but it's an important parshanut question. For in Pasuk Gimel, it says, Perek Lamed Zayin, Pasuk Gimel. Pardon me, Pasuk Dalet. The brothers saw that Yaakov loved Yosef more than anyone else. So their reaction to the favoring of Yosef was sina. Now that's a negative reaction for sure. But the reason why it's noteworthy is because later on in the dreams we will see that there are two negative reactions that the brothers have. One is sina, hatred, literally. And the other is kina, jealousy. Their reaction to the first dream is vayosifu sino oso. Their reaction to the second dream is vayikan ubo echab. And let's ask a simple question. What will lead to sina and what will lead to kina? What leads to hatred? What leads to jealousy? If you think that someone's done something wrong, so then you may hate them. But if someone has something that you want, so then you're jealous of them. That's really that's the difference between them, if we have to have a working definition. So sina, hatred, is your ill feeling over everything that's wrong with them. Kina is actually your ill feeling over everything that's right with them, because you'd like it to be right with you. Of course, if you don't have it, so then it may become wrong in your eyes, but that's only because you don't have it. Someone was once, Lahavdil, conversing with the late Mark Twain, about a certain rich family, and he says they're so rich that their money is tainted money. So Mark Twain, in his great wisdom, says, "You're right, it is tainted money. Taint yours and taint mine." And that's what makes it tainted. So, nachzor le'inyanenu. So if that's true, then we should be precise in this pasuk, because it doesn't end the way it started. The brother saw that their father favored Yosef. Their negative reaction over him favoring Yosef should have been kina, not sina. That's an interesting question. But it says, vayisnu'u or so. This question is asked by the Kometz HaMincha of Chanoch Ehrenchoy of Munich. And he says, the answer to that question, this is so delicate, but this is called learning the Parsha. The answer to that question will come by raising another nuanced question. The Pasuk says that Yaakov favored Yosef. Yes. And the Pasuk says that the brothers saw this. Yes. But it's not exactly the same. Pasuk Gimel, if we go back to Pasuk Gimel, it says, V'Yisrael ahav es Yosef mikol banav. The Pasuk Gimel says that Yaakov loved Yosef more than all of his sons. Pasuk Dalet says, Vayu'u echav, ki oso ahav avihem mikol echav. He loved him more than all of the brothers. That is a very interesting question. It's the same. All of Yaakov's sons are brothers with each other. But there's been a shift in atmosphere. Whereas the Pasuk says that Yaakov loved Yosef more than all his sons, the next Pasuk says he loved him more than all his brothers. What's the difference between them? Says the Komitz HaMincha wonderfully. Al derech hapshat, or more correctly, shall we say, bepashtus. On a simple level, the reason why Yaakov favors Yosef over all of the other children is because, as the Pasuk says, he's ben zekunim. That's the Pasuk says, ki ben zekunim. Now, what does ben zekunim mean? Rashi gives three explanations, but the first explanation is, shenolat lo le'es tiknuso. He was his favorite younger child. Binyamin was much, much younger. So, and of course, he's also the son of Rachel. In other words, all of the factors that lead Yosef to being favored by Yaakov, actually, from a certain point of view, have nothing to do with Yosef. They have more to do with how old Yaakov was when he was born, and who Yosef's mother was, but not actually about Yosef at all. And that is the quote-unquote natural favoring of the youngest child. Now, if that's true, and by the way, and that's what's criticized by the Gemara, when the Gemara says don't favor any of your children, means don't favor even the youngest one over the others, but that's what it's about. And that's why when the Pasuk says in Pasuk Gimel, V'Yisrael ahavis Yosef mikol banav, his love for Yosef over all of the others was a banav favoritism. In other words, his relationship to the children, he was the favorite child. Does that mean that he's a better person? No one spoke about that. It's a question of who was born when and from whom. You could even delete Yosef's name from the equation. Whoever would be that person would be the favorite child. Now what's interesting is, now that's once again, the Gemara says that's incorrect. Not the correct approach. And if that's all there was to it, then that would naturally have elicited the response of Kina, because Yosef gets the favorite slot, and they like to be in the sun, and he gets the spot in the sun, so they're jealous of that. That's the natural reaction. And by the way, that would not be a good thing either. But their complaint from a certain point of view would be as much against Yaakov for favoring him as it would be against Yosef for being favored. I mean, he did not arrange to be born when he was. But the next pasuk says none of that happened. What should have been the natural fallout of Yaakov favoring Yosef over the other sons, which is, again, the natural jealousy to the extent that, limited extent that natural factors are the Ovis and the Shvatim are not normal people, but the extent to which they would be affected by these things. Pasuk Dalet said something else happened. Vayu Echav, ki yoso ahav abihem mikol Echav. That shift from favoring over all his sons to favoring over all the brothers is critical, because they did not perceive in the favoring of Yosef merely the fact that Yosef was born last and therefore he doesn't mean anything bad by it. They saw that somehow Yaakov had come to look upon Yosef as better than any of the other brothers. Not more beloved of his children, but the better man. Mikol Echav, from amongst all his brothers, he was the one. But of course the Shvatim are saying, well, why would that happen? Why would he think he's better than us? The Shvatim don't think he's better than them. Why would Yaakov think that? And they came to the conclusion, somehow Yaakov has been brought to understand that Yosef is better than us. It must be because Yosef is telling him that we are much worse than he is, which is back to the Pasuk Beis, Vayavei Yosef esti basar mar el avihem. And therefore, because they perceived within the favoritism the fact that Yosef had somehow been rated as a higher person relative to them, it must be as a result of his reports about them. That was ill feeling against Yosef for doing that. So that's why the reaction was sinah. So what's the point? The point is, once again, we see exactly the same idea corroborated from the Komitz HaMincha that we saw a few moments ago in the Maharal. Namely, there is the reality, and there is the perceived reality. There is what the Pasuk describes as happened in Pasuk Gimel, and there is what the brothers saw. And once again, when the Pasuk describes what they saw, it describes to you the situation as they saw it. if the reality was that Yaakov favored him as a son, but the brothers didn't see that the way they saw it, he favored him as the brother, and that's already thanks to Yosef's reports by Yisnu'u Oso. So these are fascinating yesodos, and really that we should, they should v'hayu lana le'inayim. We should keep them with us as we look through all the other people now who see things in the Chumash. What does the Torah, how does the Torah describe it? What are they seeing? Is that the actual situation? Is that the way that they see it? Of course, that's a very delicate question, but can really be a key to many, many parshas in the Torah. Now, I just wanted to conclude by referring to a comment of the Maharal elsewhere. This is in the Sefer Gevuras Hashem, where he discusses generally the concept of the experience of Yosef in Mitzrayim. And what's interesting is, whenever we think about Mitzrayim, of course, ultimately we think about the Jewish people in Mitzrayim. But a lot had to happen in order to prepare the way. This year, we've seen already in Parshas Lech Lecha that Avraham Avinu is preparing the way for his children. Seyu Kavoshes Aderech Lefnei Bonecha. A couple of weeks ago, we saw that even Yaakov's experiences somehow were instrumental in preparing the pre-experience of Golas Mitzrayim that we saw through the Vilna Gaon. And the Maharal adds a third personality, and from a certain point of view, it's easier to understand in a linear sense, but it's a bigger chiddush. And that personality is Yosef. But the Maharal says that Yosef actually experienced once again on an individual level what would be experienced by the entire Jewish people on a communal level. Yosef is the original Avodim Hayinu b'Mitzrayim. He was literally sold as a slave. No one else was ever sold as a slave before him from our family into Mitzrayim. He went through the whole thing. He experienced Avodim Hayinu. He experienced Vayotzeinu. And in a sense, he enabled, as a forerunner for the Jewish people, right, he enabled that breakthrough to occur. Moreover, says Maharal, very forthrightly, the Jewish people were considered to have an amazing distinction within Mitzrayim. They were slaves and they were downtrodden, they were everything, but they kept themselves in terms of physical morality and physical relationships. They kept themselves to themselves, and that is considered no mean feat at all. There was one exception in decades of history. Achaz Haisa, who pierced the Mahakosov, the Shlomas Basdivri. But with one exception proves the rule. And what a rule. And we cannot begin to comprehend what that means. Says Maharal, that is thanks in great measure to Yosef. Once again, the primary nisoyon of Yosef, as the Pasuk describes at length in Parshas Vayeshev, him and Eshes Potiphar, and he keeps himself to himself, even though it gets him into a lot of trouble, and he suffers for it. And he is Godur Ba'arayos. And that allows the Jewish people, it brings a certain atmosphere. And the atmosphere in Egypt is not conducive to being Godur Ba'arayos, as we know. So, what's interesting is that we see a certain aspect, if we could borrow the expression of Ma'ase Ovos Simon Labonim for Yosef. Now, the reason why, on the one hand, is that it's an expression that sounds like it can't be borrowed, because it's only true from the Ovos. But as we've discussed on a number of occasions, from a certain point of view, Yosef also has a semi-Av status. It's expressed in a number of ways, and we're not going to go into it at length. We've discussed it at other times, but he is the only one of the Shvatim who actually himself becomes a father to Shvatim. For example, Menashe and Ephraim, Keruvim and Shimon, in a sense he closes the generation gap. And if that's true, then as surely as Yaakov and Eile told us, Yaakov Yosef, Yosef is considered to be somehow an extension of Yaakov. Of course, the details are very precise and important to be stated as such. But there is a certain aspect of Yosef which resembles Yaakov. And Yaakov's children were all Shvatim, and so were Yosef's, from a certain point of view. And so on, and so forth. He is referred to in Birchas Yaakov as Even Yisrael. Mishamro Even Yisrael. Rashi comments that the word Even is a contraction of Av and Ben. And that, in a sense, is Yosef in a nutshell. And therefore, if we would be able to confer upon him or to perceive within him a certain aspect of Maase Avos, to the extent that he himself is an Av, and his experiences directly led the Jewish people into their national experiences. What's interesting is how this impacts us on a practical level. And does it? Well, it depends who you ask. Every Jew knows that on Seder night, we have 4 cups of wine. Why 4? Well, of course, the well-known explanation is the 4 expressions of Geula, the 4 stages of Geula, Botseisi, Vitzalti, Vilakachti, Vigaalti, and that's from the Yerushalmi in Psachim, the 10th Perek. But there is another opinion there in the Yerushalmi, which says that the source of the 4 cups on Seder night are Parshas Vayeshev, Reishis Perek Mem. Why? Because when the butler has his dream, the Saramashkim, so the word kos is mentioned 4 times. Arba kosos. It's quite a thing to say. We just need to understand it. How could that be the source of for arba kosos? Ma inyan butler, it's a leila seder. Except say the mafarshim, we understand that on Seder night we are celebrating our Yetzias Mitzrayim. The seed of Yetzias Mitzrayim are with the dream of the Saramashkim. Because that was the beginning of the turnaround for Yosef and Yosef's ability to his rise to freedom. That was his Yetzias Mitzrayim. And in a sense, therefore, we celebrate at a root level Yetzias Mitzrayim with Yosef, as it was a product of his interpretation of the dream of the Saramashkim. And that finds its expression with Arba Kosos every year. Haflev Afelem. So say the Mefarshim. I would add what I consider to be I'm not sure what I would call it, but it's a feeling that I have. It's an atmospheric feeling. And that's enough. I'll draw upon my Hasidic roots here. But we say that the 4 cups, where do the 4 cups from? They come from the Kosos of the Saramashkim. Okay. Seder night, so the dream of the Saramashkim. Seder night, for various reasons. Now, every Yom Tov has its Lechem Mishneh, right? With the exception of Seder night, where you have 3 matzahs, one on top of the other. And the only other place that we have that template of 3 layers of baked goods is the dream of the Sarah Ofen. And I wonder whether, in a sense, those Shloshes matzahs there, Kohen Levi and Yisrael, as they accompany the Arba Kosos, complement the 2 dreams of Yosef, the 4 kosos of Sarah Mashkim and Shloshes Alichori of the Sarah Ofim, that I offer for your consideration. We'll leave it over there for this evening. Meet again next week.